This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. I saw John Hickman on Twitter ask, what are the chances of the Rockets getting Cooper Flagg after seeing him ball out against Arizona and Caleb Love and them yesterday? And I was looking at it. I went to Tankathon just to see, because you do have control of the Phoenix Suns pick, and they are in that lottery area. They have the 12th worst record right now. So, obviously, there's a good chance that you end up with a 12, and I have a strong feeling you're not going to get Cooper Flagg if you only have the 12th pick.
Right.
But there is
safe to say.
If the season were to end right now, there is a 1% chance, or 1.5% chance, that 12th pick in the lottery would garner you, or the 12th best odds would garner you the number one pick.
Here's the thing. 1% is good enough for me to, you know, I watch.
Sometimes that's all it takes.
That's all it takes. But it could get better, right?
It could get better if the Phoenix Suns continue losing, and you can help that out by getting a victory over them.
What would you do if Sunday they did get like the number one, number two overall pick? Do you stay there, or are you trading?
God, yes. God, yes. This guy he's going to be he's going to be superstar.
Yeah.
Superstar. You talk about Cooper Flagg.
Yeah.
Well, he's probably going to be number one.
No, right? You said number one.
I said number one or number two.
Oh, well, number two changes everything.
Yeah, number one, got to give me Wimby. Yeah, you got to give me Wimby for that one.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the Texans, though. Cal McNair sent he signed up a nice little letter that was sent to season ticket holders.
I think he typed it on a Royal typewriter.
I mean, it was digitized. So if he typed it on a typewriter, then he handed it to somebody for them to then go in.
Do you think he actually wrote this typed
it? I think he absolutely
Or did he just kind of like talk to somebody?
I think
he
told people what he wanted to say. It's his words. Maybe just
that's swag, though.
If maybe just
hey, write this letter for me. I want to talk to the Houston Texans and let you know that everything is. And somebody just sitting there writing it down. Yeah.
What if it was AI?
Oh, God. Please, Cal. Please don't do that. All right. I will give you that letter if you are not a season ticket holder in a segment that I like to call reading. Mm-hmm. Off the field, there have been several articles written in recent weeks about the future of NRG Stadium. Although we have 7 years away from the expiration of our lease, I want you to know that we are working collaboratively and diligently with our partners, the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, Harris County, and HCSCC, to identify the best path forward. With those partners, We have conducted a number of studies and continue to learn more about what we need to be successful in the future under the leadership of our new team president, Mike Thoman, who has the extensive history of developing and renovating stadiums. We support a renovation of NRG Stadium and are committed to exploring all possible solutions to ensure long-term success. We want to ensure we have a world-class facility that provides a competitive advantage for our team and a great experience for our fans while standing tall as a community asset. Ultimately, with our value partners, our goal is to find a solution that works for all stakeholders involved, where everyone feels like a winner. Thank you for your continued support. And as we embark on the 2025 season together, signed, D. Cal McNair.
All right, so the talking points are very clear now, right? Mike Thoman, when he was on Texans Radio, said variations of the exact same thing.
When he was on here,
yeah, he said variations of the exact same thing. And now Cal is saying a different variation of the exact same thing. We're committed. 7-year process. Could be a 7-year process. I always like to note that's a guideline, not a rule. I mean, these contracts can be reworked. So it could be 3 years, 5 years, whatever. Our priority is renovation, but all options are available. We're hearing the exact same talking points time after time after time, which is exactly how I would do it. It's not a criticism, because you do want to see what you're going to do, what you could do, but you also want to have leverage if you need it.
Yeah, he ain't trying to show them cards.
Yeah, you want to have leverage if you can have it. So, and you and I have talked about this. I get the mixed emotions, but I'm very much an advocate of, at minimum, renovation. I think the stadium needs it.
Sure.
I feel like if there is some kind of way to not totally jack the citizenry, a new stadium would probably be preferred, just because I'm a big fan of obviously blowing up the dome, but not just that, making it a true destination point entertainment district. Between now and whenever this thing is resolved, you're gonna get tired of me saying that. Every successful and new sports stadium, much less NFL stadium, but especially NFL stadiums, they have to be a place. It's a different world. They have to be a place that people want to go to rather than their man cave, you know. And I feel like it has to happen here, as just not just a fan, but for the community. You know, that area has not really gotten a whole lot better in the last 40 years in terms of wanting being a place where people want to go, other than the games.
The last 5 years.
But I'm saying for the last 40 years, people go there for games, and that's it.
Yeah. And it's getting worse.
Yeah.
And so the phrases in this particular letter that jumped out to me was world-class facility, competitive advantage, community asset.
Thank you.
And I think those are he laid out pretty cleanly and clearly, I think, the things that they're looking for, which is obviously a clear upgrade to not just being a nice facility, but a world-class facility. Mm-hmm. Competitive advantage is an interesting one, because I'm interested into, like, what are the aspects of the stadium that they believe can create a competitive advantage, like on the field? I'm guessing that's
people.
Facilities as well?
I think it's people.
Okay.
It's been an ongoing thing. I mean, you hear them blowing the fireworks and all that stuff to get fans in seats. And create that atmosphere. Now, maybe there's some tweaks to that.
Well, if you're talking about getting fans in seats, one of the things that also is goes beyond the stadium itself is infrastructure.
Sure.
Because that's one of the things that whenever we have these conversations about, why can't people immediately jump up. They're like, traffic is not one.
Exactly.
And that does make me wonder, and because now I've turned to what are the what ifs with this? Like, how do you make that happen without moving from that location, that particular location? And I want to make it clear, Mike Thoman, president of the team now, was within
all of them.
I mean, yeah. And all the parties involved made it very clear. Moving out of Houston is not moving out of the greater Houston area is not on the table, and it never will be.
No.
Like, so I want to start there and respecting that part of it. However, they haven't made it. They haven't said that they have to remain in that location.
Yeah.
And one of the things I think about, because I think Brooks Capenna wrote a very interesting piece in The Athletic today about the history of the Love You Blue, and obviously just taking you through the negotiation, if you will, that Bud Adams had with the city. Like, it's always been a really weird circumstance of the tenant, you know, relationship.
It's the worst.
With the organization and Harris County. I was like, is there a chance of them moving out of Harris County, though?
I don't...
And dealing with a different county or a different municipality.
I think that's a very slight chance.
But okay.
This is what I would say to the point of maybe moving away from NRG Park. They absolutely made it very clear. Moving from Houston is an absolute no. Moving from this area, they've never said it's an absolute no.
Okay.
They've said it's a priority to stay. There's a big difference between that being a priority and an absolutely not.
Sure.
So I feel like they could move from here. And you know why? Because I think there's more leverage. I think anytime you just sort of float it out there, like with the county, you know, with some of the powers that be that are maybe giving you trouble, if I would, again, none of this is criticism. I would be doing the exact same thing.
Do you think they're using the Astrodome as the leverage of, you know, if we don't get this tore down and redo something here, then we probably going to move elsewhere?
I don't know if they're putting it in those words, but again, I would do that too. I would say, listen, man, listen, that thing's got to go.
Because I don't see, because let's say they want to stay there and maybe, I don't know if they could tear NRG down and rebuild it or how they do that, but there's no way you could keep the Astrodome there. I just don't.
That would be my answer.
So that would be their leverage.
That would be my answer. I would say, I want to stay here. We want to stay here. We want to renovate. But we can't do either of those things with the Astrodome here. And just make it very clear.
And if the city say, nah, we can't tear this down, then...
Funny you should say that.
Okay.
Because running parallel to the letter and this discussion that we're having is another story that was in the Chronicle yesterday that had to do with what Jim Crane is doing.
Crane, the owner of the
Houston Astros. And I read the story and I went, huh, I know what I would do. Again, I would be doing the exact same thing. So the story in the Chronicle, and let me do the segment called Reading.
Okay,
that
very
I
good.
Like to call Reading.
I love it.
The Astros insist a new era. This is the Astros, but stay with me here because I think it affects the Texans. The Astros insist a new era is ahead for the blocks surrounding Daikin Park. The Astros made a series of purchases for the land across from Texas Avenue in 2016 and 2019, envisioning a vibrant ballpark entertainment district with bars, restaurants, and shops. Astros owner Jim Crane cited the large-scale mixed-use development, The Battery, outside of Truist Park in Atlanta as a primary inspiration. And when observing the area flooded with fans, especially in October, it's easy to see Crane's vision. If executed correctly, the Astros could have a thriving commerce center on their hands, finally bringing continuity to a prominent but imperfect section of downtown Houston. So Jim Crane has been buying little pieces of land around... I almost said it, around Daikin Park. He's been buying these little... If I'm the Texans, if I'm Cal and Hannah McNair, I'm picking up the phone and saying, what else is for sale around there? Because this sort of partnership, if you will, even if it's literal or just figurative, with the Astros and a huge, awesome... Keep in mind, they're redoing
George R. Brown.
And they're closing off, I think, Avenida de las Americas. They're going to close that off, make it a walkway. And
I always
all
love when you put a little sauce on it.
And so downtown is going to be awesome in the next 10 years, maybe 6-7 years. So if I'm Cal and Hannah, I'm sitting there going, hey, let's go kick the tires over there, see if we can partner up and find a place at or near the Daikin Park area, maybe in East Side. We start buying up some of that stuff.
But see, it will be a little easier for Jim Crane to do that because Daikin Park is downtown.
Sure.
And there's stuff around it. But don't you feel like Cal and Hannah will have to find a place for a stadium?
Yes.
Downtown, yes. First?
Absolutely.
With the higher land rates or what have you of like buying that amount of land downtown, I imagine would
but
be
But on the east side,
more.
Not as expensive. And let me remind everybody, the Astros moved from the Astrodome. The Astros did exactly what I'm talking about. You know, in the late 90s, they had a big issue with the county, all the things that we're talking about, the county, the rent, the Astrodome facility itself. And they said, you know what? We're going to go ahead and build this stadium downtown. And now look, and now he's going to expand it even more. The Texans could do the exact same thing, a little higher price, but you're not a servant to what the county's whims are. And the Astrodome is gone in terms of being in your hair. Like, I could easily see where you got a downtown, you know, entertainment district, as we just described. You got Daikin Park, and let's say within 3 or 4 blocks, you got Texan Stadium, whatever it is.
I hear what you're saying. I just don't know. The thing that I wonder about is like getting people in. I'm wondering if one that's if that doesn't get more difficult in the downtown area on a game day,
mm-hmm.
and two, the game plan that it seems typical, not just not here. And of course, I know this is a very unique place compared to other places, but I think that we can use other places to kind of give us a little information. We've seen other places leverage the, you know, the exurbs, the suburbs, to then mm-hmm. be able to negotiate with the city where, yes, they are usually more stressed on resources because they are being the hub for the entire area, whereas the suburbs get to benefit off of that, and they can maybe take some of those, you know, their tax base, which sometimes is more so mm-hmm. because it's oftentimes people that can afford to live outside of that general central area, to then, you know, put into a stadium, right? Like, that is one of those things where you have sometimes, in the same way that you have various cities bidding against each other, sometimes you'll have municipalities in the same place bidding against each other mm-hmm. because they want the services and the in theory, the traffic that's attracted. And I do wonder, I mean, someone texted in, bring it to Missouri City, right? Mm-hmm. Or the Missouri County or what have, or Montgomery County, rather.
Yeah.
And then, or bring it out. There's land out that way, right? And there's people that will talk about Katy, Kingswood. Like, there's all sorts of different areas around here that I'd be interested to see if they wouldn't be like, hey, we're willing to pony up and give you a situation that isn't as complex as what Harris County has with this stadium, where we have it and we're the ones who will renovate it, and you are at our beck and call, whereas there might be a favorable sweetheart deal to be made elsewhere. And I do wonder if that isn't something that the Texans would be interested in, keeping it in the greater Houston area, mm-hmm. but finding somewhere where the land is cheaper and where a municipality would be willing to give you more money.
My strategy, use it all. Use it. Wherever you can find leverage, use it. And as far as the downtown and congestion and all that stuff, look, those are all things, you know, those are all things that are absolutely true. But I was here. We had this exact same discussion about putting a baseball park downtown.
Sure.
This exact same one. So it's like I always say, don't tell me about the waves. Just bring that ship in.
So look, it's becoming hotter and hotter. And I thought it was very interesting that Cal felt it necessary to respond to mm-hmm. all of the reporting, a lot of it by the Chronicle. And you mentioned also, you mentioned the Athletic, correct?
Yes.
And like the reporting that has been happening, it's not out of nowhere and it's not for nothing, right? Clearly they feel necessary. Hey, this is how we feel. These are our stances mm-hmm. in response to those things. This feels like it's going to continue to be something that's interesting and that's something to watch as the Texans try and find what they call a world-class facility mm-hmm. that gives them a competitive advantage and allows them to have a community, be a community asset. Those are the three things that I'm going to continue to use as
community asset
that I look through all this for them. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, it's about the time where we hand it over to Figgy Fig for the mixtape. What you got for us?
Yeah, man. So for the first time in Figgy's mixtape history, we have a special guest joining us.
Okay.
And she brought us some crawfish ice cream, and I'm making y'all try it.
Okay.
All right. Is crawfish ice cream good? We will find out next.
Pass the aux cord and crank up the volume. Figgy Fig's in the driver's seat. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. It's time for Figgy's Mixtape on Sports Radio 610.
Yep, it's the mixtape in the loop, Sports Radio 610. It's your man Figgy Fig holding it down on a Friday. Happy Friday. And we got some ice cream in the building.
We sure do.
I got to give a special shout out to Nikki from Red Circle Ice
Cream. What's up?
Oh, my bad. I forgot to cut your mic. Big shout out to Nikki from Red Circle Ice Cream. And she brought us some crawfish ice cream.
Crawfish ice cream, guys.
Yeah. Nikki, how in the world did you come up with some crawfish ice cream?
Well, why not, right? We're here in the South. Everybody loves crawfish ice cream, right?
Well, they love crawfish.
They love crawfish. And they're going to love crawfish ice cream even more.
Yeah.
You know, eating with my family and friends, sauce is dripping down my arms. Mm-hmm. I got an epiphany. I'm known as the ice cream lady, so why not?
Why not?
Why not?
You know, Nikki, I think you need a little more energy and giddiness. just a little. You need to be a little happier.
Right? Just a little bit.
You need to be a little happier. Don't be so down on yourself all
but
the time.
But you know what? Red Circle's motto is eat ice cream, live happy. So
well,
there you
are
go.
It. Yeah, yeah. You are it.
So how many people actually buy this ice cream?
We have had this for over 6 years. So there's a reason why we make it for every crawfish season. Mm-hmm. And we always sell out.
That's crazy.
That's great. And y'all tried the ice cream during the break.
I was honest with you, Nick. I said, I'm skeptical. All right. I'm just going to be honest. I don't want to lie.
And he had a real serious face,
and
too.
I did. I had a serious face, which is not often. But then I had a scoop, and then I had another one. And I was like, well, dang. That's pretty
that
dang
worked,
good.
Right, yeah. Right. Super creamy, though, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So how did you make the actual ice cream part taste so much like crawfish? Because the ice cream part tasted like crawfish flavor.
So, you know, with ice cream, it's one of those things where you've got to do sweet and salty at the same time, right? And you don't want to take away from either of those profiles. Mm-hmm. But with crawfish, you got to boil it down. And to get that intense flavor, right? So that's what we did with the ice cream. We had to really boil it down to get that intense flavor to pull through with the cream.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that you taste it through and through, crawfish all the way, right?
I keep taking spoonfuls because I'm like, there's no way that, and it just keeps hitting me in that way. How long did it take you to revise this recipe, though? Because this is, doesn't seem like a thing where you just drop it in and boom,
hey,
it's done.
I'm the ice cream lady. One shot, baby.
Really?
One shot.
Seriously?
Yeah. Touchdown, one shot.
Wow.
So what's the wildest flavor you ever made as far as ice cream? Okay, because I feel like this is pretty wild, but I feel like you got more tricks up your sleeve.
So, Figgy, you know, we've got over 150 rotating flavors, and our next flavor is, it's not too crazy. It's durian ice cream. So you never know what a durian ice cream is?
What is I've never had a durian. I've heard
what
of it.
What have you heard of? It's like this custard-like fruit, but it's banned in like a lot of Southeast Asian countries because it's so pungent.
Okay.
The smell will just hit you hard.
Okay.
But we make it, we have it available now at Red Circle Ice Cream.
Mm-hmm.
You definitely got to try it. You guys, ride to station, let's make it a party. And you can go down there and try some durian ice cream at the store. But we've got also other flavors right now. Our flavor right now that we're featuring is mango sticky rice.
I didn't taste that one. I did the other two. But those are delicious.
It's really, really good. Yeah. And I brought you some other samples, of course. We got hot Cheetos.
Mm-hmm. I tried that one.
And that one right there, Clint from the other show, he tried it and he was just like, I can't wrap my brain around that. It's hot Cheetos.
That's exactly
so
right.
So we really try to create flavors that, you know, people eat every single day and go, okay, well, I can't imagine eating that as an ice cream. And then when they have it, they're like, oh my God. Yeah. Oh my God, it's crawfish. It's hot Cheetos. It's durian ice cream.
Yeah, that was me.
We've got chocolate and vanilla too, you know, for those folks that just want chocolate and vanilla.
Sure, yeah.
You know, but we're also known for our churros.
The churros.
We make
good.
Freshly hot churros, right, guys?
Yeah.
And so when you put the churros with the ice cream, it just makes it a whole, just in the whole other level.
What kind of churros do you have? Like, what type of flavors?
So we've got anything from our signature cinnamon sugar. We've got fruity pebbles, dulce de leche.
That was mine.
You know, fruity pebbles, Nutella. We've got it. You want it, we've got it for you. And we make it fresh every single day.
All right, so our text line that are the folks texting in, 713-572-4610, are already kind of putting up a challenge. My co-host here is a huge smoker and griller, and somebody said, what's next, smoked brisket ice cream? Would that even be possible in
you
your mind?
You know what? A few years ago in the rodeo station, we actually had a barbecue-flavored ice cream, and
what?
That did really well as well.
Unbelievable.
So whatever you think of, I can probably create it for you.
All right.
That is crazy. So how which one of your ice cream flavors was the most controversial flavor?
For sure.
That was
it's gotta be our crawfish ice cream figure.
Yeah.
Really?
For sure.
Okay.
And that's a no brainer, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had a lot of hate a little bit to begin with, but then slowly when we, you know, presented it at the store and people came out to try it, they were like, this works.
Yeah.
I can't believe it, you know?
It does.
So it really works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're a small business here in Houston, and we have just had a tremendous amount of support around this flavor, and a lot of people just coming in and saying, we love it. It's really good. Keep doing what you're doing. And we just love the support. And we do also have two other stores. They're franchise stores out in Pearland, out in Sugarland. So go out and support. If you can't make it out to the Chinatown location, we're here to serve you our wonderful ice cream, waffles, and churros.
Have you ever seen anyone that try one of these crazy flavors that actually like had to throw up or vomit?
You know what? They came close, but then we you know, so for people that don't kind of believe that the crawfish ice cream is going to work for them, I give them a chaser.
Okay.
So I prepare them. So I you know, because I'm not a good person. I don't know how to do CPR yet. You know, so I don't want to have to do that in the store, you know, get a defibrillator or anything like that.
Yeah.
So I give them a little chaser.
Yeah.
So we kind of lead them to it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We hold your hand through the whole process and make it real, real fun.
That's good.
All right, so you talk about supporting. I see you. You're wearing your U of H Cougars hat.
Go Cougs! Go Cougs!
What's been the experience watching the Cougs this year for you?
You know what? I'm an alumni, right? So you got to love Coach Sampson, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he is just... I went to the game at the last game of the season, and I was able to get courtside seats.
Wow.
And so, oh my gosh, it's unbelievable. Mm. And the speech that he gave at the end of the season, it was just amazing. I mean, everybody was just like, yes, roof and everything. It was amazing to see it real close up and everything. The players, coach. It's a camaraderie, obviously.
Have we gotten any local athletes to try some of these ice creams?
We have not, but we would love to have all the athletes come in, you know, throw it down with us at Red Circle Ice Cream.
The first thing I thought of is, like, what would Kelvin Sampson say trying to eat the...
Well, you had him at U of H alum.
he'll probably do it just for that. That's right.
Yes, you had him at that. My only question for you is, can you just work on your attitude a little bit? Can you just pick it up a little bit? But it's very endearing.
And thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you guys so much.
Yeah. I'll get you out of here on this. So if you had to come up with one flavor based off of this show, what type of flavor ice cream would you come up with?
Okay.
Let's put that out to the polls for your listeners.
All right.
And then get back to me on that. And now let me go and get into the test kitchen and roll something out for your listeners.
So this is going to be the official In the Loop flavor ice cream.
So all your special listeners, hit it up with me. Let me know.
Yeah.
Somebody, we already have a text in. They said, Lopez, this is your moment. You have OG barbecue sauce?
OG barbecue sauce that I make.
Okay. OG sauce ice cream?
OG sauce ice cream.
Oh, that sounds like a big collab with us.
That's a big collab.
Yes. Yes.
Let me know. Hit me up.
Yes,
definitely. Right. I'm down with it. Hey, can you explain to people, Nikki, where can they get some of this lovely ice cream?
So we're located here in Chinatown at 6838 Ranchester Drive. We're just a few blocks down. It's not that far.
Okay.
Maybe 12, 15 minutes down here.
Yeah.
So come out and check us out. And also our Red Circle ice cream in Sugarland and in Pearland as well.
Man. Well, all right.
Thank you so much,
yeah,
Nikki.
Thanks for joining us.
Eat ice cream, live happy.
I love it. I love it.
Obviously.
Thanks for supporting local, guys.
Yeah, appreciate it.
How did y'all like the Cheeto one? I haven't tried that.
I didn't know what it was. I didn't see the label.
Was it spicy?
And so I ate it, and I told Reggie, I said, it's got a little kick to it. It's very good.
It's a slow burn,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And he goes, well, look at the label. I was like, oh, and I don't even eat. This is a testament. I don't even eat Flamin' Hot Cheetos. I prefer regular Cheetos, but I like that. That was good. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I haven't tasted all the other ones. All right, so if I had to try one next, Nikki, what's the next one I should try?
Definitely try our Elmo Crunch ice cream. It's our signature flavor. It's red for Red Circle ice cream and Elmo, obviously. Mm-hmm. It's our version of cookies and cream, and we can't keep this flavor in stock every single day. Honestly, we sell out all the time.
Awesome.
And it's that good.
Good.
I can't wait to try that one.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to have it with our freshly made churros.
Okay. I don't think I can eat that many churros today because I feel like I've already...
I'm going to have to say it like that from
There's
now on.
There's never enough time for churros, right?
Exactly.
Appreciate you, Nikki, for
stopping by. Thank you guys so much.
Right. Thank you for the ice cream.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Oh, you got? I thought you had something on the backside. Okay, very good.
That's all I got, man.
All right.
Happy Fridays. Ice cream. Happy Friday.
My Friday is very happy. I just keep taking bites of this ice cream like, ain't no way this actually tastes like some crawfish. All right.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Funky Friday, Happy Friday, an ice cream Friday, apparently, and a churro Friday
churro
as well.
Churro!
All right. Coming up next, we're getting ready to hand it off to the fellas of the drive. I kind of want to do a mock draft check-in, if you're okay.
Yes, sir.
Like, let's do a mock draft check-in. There's been a few of them that have come out with multi-round picks, so I kind of want to do that a little bit. We'll do that next.
Thank you, Figgy.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
All right, yeah, you are in the loop on a funky Friday. Hope that you've had a good day as we're gearing up to head into the weekend. John Lopez, Reginald Atula, Figgy Fig, hanging out with you. Appreciation to Miss Nikki at Red Circle Ice Cream for coming up and bringing us a mind-boggling ice cream still to this day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm amazed by it. All right. Before we hand it off to the fellas of the drive, though, I did want to get into this. Mock draft check-in, because this week, last couple of days, I've seen a few multi-round mock drafts that's been kind of interesting.
I saw a couple pop through, yeah.
And obviously, like, you know, we see the things at the very top of them, but like seeing a multi-round gets interesting because it's not just, all right, who would you take? But it's a consideration of now, how do you go about building your team out and finding various different talents going through it? So I'll start with ESPN, Matt Miller, who is a draft scout for ESPN. And I kind of bring this up because I have questions about it. He starts with obviously the 25th pick. And he goes for the Texans. He selects Josh Simmons, Ohio State. Now, we've had some conversation about Josh Simmons this
already
week.
Have a little bit of a question on right? that one, yeah.
Coming back with the patellar tendon.
Is he swarm?
Yeah.
But is he swarm is basically the big question, mm-hmm. right? They talked about maturity issues and such things, and those things pop up, you have those kind of concerns about a player on this team, particularly after you move Laremy Tunsil.
Yeah.
It feels like you ask the question, what did you do it for?
Yeah.
You know
well,
what I mean?
The way I brought it up, he's kind of a poor man's Laremy, based on what the reporting has been anyway. You know, in terms of really good pass blocker, not sure about, you know, him leadership being a, you know, swarmy kind of guy. So I'm already questioning, you know, that one. But the funny thing about seven round mock drafts, every year I get caught up in them knowing that I shouldn't get caught up in any of it. Because, like, everything, we all know how the draft
no,
works.
No, of course. You know, it's like, I view the mock drafts as a exercise in iteration. Like, you do it over and over, and you kind of work a lot of the various permutations of what could happen mm-hmm. to get you to a place where you're like, okay, I kind of like the way that one lands
yes.
or what have you.
Yes.
And obviously, we won't know because there's so much more that is then just like, what can the player do? Which, that's a huge part, don't get mm-hmm. me wrong, but it's, what do they then do when they get into the circumstances of being in a building and, you know, what is around them and then being in that particular city and what all of those things come with. But Josh Simmons, it's just, I don't know, I've soured on him, and maybe I did this to myself in mm-hmm. some ways, but with some of the reports that have been out there about his general demeanor, and then obviously, then we're also still leaning on the idea that, yes, he'll just be perfectly fine coming off of this injury that we don't see very often for offensive linemen. Mm-hmm. That's something that's concerning, but okay, he has that there. Then after that, he goes with the guard, Marcus Mbau, in the second round for the Texans. Mm-hmm. So how do you like the idea? I think for me, looking at these multi-round drafts, I was just like, how do you like the idea of the way he goes about building? Tackle guard at 1-2. How do you like that feel?
Now that is something I can get behind, even though I, you know, how I feel about running backs, but nevertheless, it's a big need, and even though they've added some guys, it's a need where you need to go younger. You need to have the future, especially with C.J. Stroud and others coming up on their contracts.
Yeah, I think that that's fair. And not you talk about C.J. Stroud and others. I think you're also talking about on this offensive line, mm-hmm. the guys that you bring in are stopgaps. You know, you're looking at one-year deals on a lot of them, right? Lakin Tomlinson and Cam Robinson on the left side.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you kind of are wanting to start to build this. Mm-hmm. The only interesting thing is that he's not a big size guy. He's an athleticism guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how you feel about that. And I don't know that we have a definitive feel on what the offensive game plan is for Nick Caley with his game plan offense. But you seem to lean into the idea that this is probably going to be Patriots-based, at least run-wise.
I'm just about convinced.
And that feels like you need size.
Yeah. Just about convinced based on, you know, not just the Trent Brown Patriots guy, but just, you know, the Cole Popovich, you know, his roots, even though Nick Caley, you know, has got some Sean McVay in his recent background, his roots. I mean, this is what they grew up sort of coaching, you know, is this I hate to use smash mouth, but this very direct power type offensive line. I think that's exactly what we're going to see.
All right, so you go tackle, you go guard, and then with the first of your third round picks, because remember, you have a couple of those courtesy of your Laremy Tunsil trade. Terrence Ferguson, you go tackle mm-hmm. Terrence Ferguson out of Oregon. Or sorry, not tackle, tight end.
I was going to say.
Yeah, sorry. Tight end mm-hmm. out of Oregon, who, you know, not a great run blocker, but a solid catcher of the football. And, of course, you give Nick Caley a tight end here. So tackle, guard, tight end, and then to round that out just for the top four to end, I guess, mm-hmm. your day two drafts, you get a defensive tackle, TJ Sanders. So no wide receiver mm-hmm. in the first couple of days.
No
in fact,
back.
Just letting you know, no wide receiver at all because on day three, DJ Giddens, running back out of Kansas State at 166. Jeremy Harris, a cornerback late in the sixth, or actually early seventh. And then later in the seventh, a few picks later, LaQuint Allen, another running back. So two day three running backs and a cornerback. No wide receiver in the draft. Mm-hmm. How would you like the idea of going tackle guard, tight end, defensive tackle, no wide receiver, two day three running backs?
Well, who's your third wide receiver? I mean, what kind of confidence do you have?
Justin Watson.
Yeah, what kind of confidence?
John Mechie.
that's it. I mean,
Xavier Hutchinson. Like, you're leaning into that being your wide receiver course. One of those guys having
no
to
love
step up.
Braxton
Berrios.
Yeah. Well, he's going to be returning kicks. We'll see. Nah, man. I don't like that.
Just the draft in general. You're like, I'm out on this draft. Yeah. I kind of set you up because as soon as I started at Josh Simmons, I was like,
Ew. I was like, yeah, you're already off to a bad start here. But I do like the positions, except for maybe tight end, I would replace with running back or wide receiver. Probably yeah. wide receiver, to be honest.
And I'm surprised that I was like, you also were like, hey, day two running back. Because yeah. I was the guy who was yeah. like, and I liked, and of course I like DJ Giddens. He played mm-hmm. He played at my alma mater, right? Mm-hmm. But I like DJ Giddens as a guy that you throw into a room and see if he can shake some things up, right? Yeah. But you seem to be like, if you could address running back earlier in a way that yeah. gives you a real true backup to Joe Mixon as opposed to just having Damian Pierce.
And I think the odds of getting a guy that can contribute sooner rather than later are higher at running back than any other position. Just because you can get him in a later round.
Sure, 100%.
You know, you get him in a third round, a lot of guys, that's high. That's a high draft pick for a running back.
So that is that's just, you know, Matt Miller's draft. Matt Miller, you low on the power rankings of draft pickers for the Texans
at
right
least
now.
In this room.
Because I'm not very fond of that seven round. But how about a four-round mock draft from the NFL Network, mm-hmm. right, or NFL.com? This one I find to be a little bit more interesting. So we're not going to get your day three feel of rounding it out. However, you do start again with offensive tackle, except it's Ariante Ursary of Minnesota, a guy mm-hmm. that has not been mocked a lot to the Texans. Usually when we're talking tackles, you're seeing Kelvin Banks Jr. Sometimes you're seeing Josh Simmons. Not a lot of Ariante Ursary mm-hmm. being mocked to the Texans.
Enormous guy.
Yes, very big.
Fits the profile. I want to say he's like 6'7". Yeah, he's right up there with Trent Brown. He could play first base on some of those softball teams. Enormous guy. Fits the profile. Not one that we've talked about a whole lot, but I'm slightly familiar with his work, and I know he's a big dude that would certainly fit what they're thinking about doing.
All right, so you go tackle there. You mentioned it. You're looking at size there. But then after Ursary, you go defensive tackle as opposed to mm-hmm. going offensive line. So you add Joshua Farmer of Florida State. So just early on, again, I'm kind of looking at the way mm-hmm. that they're stacking these together. Offensive line, defensive line, particularly tackle and then defensive tackle. How does that feel to you?
I'm a little hesitant, but that one I get. You know, we've talked about this has been one of your big points. Like, they don't have that stud. You know, that, and I'm not saying that that's going to be a rookie, but it's a guy that maybe could surprise as a second round defensive tackle, you know, and if you have that confidence in him, maybe he could be something. Certainly learn from some good veterans that have done well here. I see the thought process there. I don't necessarily agree with the second round pick, but I can see what they're doing.
And the only thing is he's 305, broad chest, proportional thickness, all those types of things, right? So you have that guy maybe as that space eater there to mm-hmm. try and kind of play that one tech. It doesn't have great quickness. Mm-hmm. And that's a little scary.
Well,
especially
need to be 360 then.
You know, yeah. Exactly. For a defensive line, mm-hmm. a defense for D'Amico Ryans, like yeah. the way that they, it seems like you'd want a guy in the middle that has a little bit of quickness. But then also, you're not going to find the perfect mm-hmm. Draft guy unless you're drafting in those blue chip areas, which we yeah. know this year there's not as many of those. Okay, so you go offensive tackle and Ursary out of Minnesota, defensive tackle Farmer with your second round pick, and then with your third round picks, this is where I find it kind of interesting. Linebacker Shamar Jones out of Florida mm-hmm. with your 79th pick, and then with the 89th pick, wide receiver Savion Williams TCU. So again, this four round mock, offensive tackle, defensive linebacker, tackle, huh? linebacker, wide receiver.
Linebacker. Nah.
Oh, we're also throwing this one out?
Yeah. Well, the third round pick I'm throwing out.
Which one, the linebacker?
Yeah. Yeah. I you know, I feel like they're going to, I mean, they brought back, you know, what they had, and they're definitely going to, they can find a linebacker like that elsewhere with higher priority at receiver, running back, you know, et cetera.
Yeah. I'm kind of interested that you see multiple mm-hmm. mock drafts mm-hmm. kind of stack it in a way where you go, huh, okay.
Yeah.
I appreciated that they added Savion Williams in there, who's like, mm-hmm. you know, a guy that can kind of go deep on the outside, play to TCU. Mm-hmm. I know that Kyle Williams has been a guy that's gotten a lot of love recently.
Didn't he get isn't he going to get a top 30 visit here?
I actually don't recall. I'll have to double check on
that.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I know for certain that, like, that's a dude who has the kind of over-the-top speed mm-hmm. that, you know, it feels like you're looking for. The only problem is, and I guess I will again ask you one more question as I've been peppering you with these when it comes to draft. Are you good with the wide receiver profile of really fast, questionable hands? Because that's what Kyle Williams seemingly is.
I think, like, hands is kind of like, it could be one of those things you get better at the NFL level. So yes, to answer your question,
okay.
I mean, there have been a lot of guys that, you know, have had that same question in the profile and end up being pretty good receivers.
All right, so that's just a real quick mock draft check-in, because I saw there was a couple of multi-round drafts, and I was like, okay, this might give us an opportunity to kind of check in with the way that teams are looking at the build, the, you know, mm-hmm. the full build, as opposed to just what is the player in the first round that fits kind of one of their needs. How are they looking at the way that you go, you know?
Yep, sorry.
Who are you apologizing to?
I just kicked this chair into you.
Not into me, just an empty chair.
Okay, well, all good.
All right, real quick, before we talk with the fellas of the drive, and yes, Will Fuller profile kind of is what you're talking about.
No, look, there are absolutely some that are like that, yeah.
But we were talking about, you know, opening day and everything. What's your favorite opening day moment? Because MLB.com put out a best opening day moment for every single team. And I don't know that you had a moment yesterday that you would absolutely go, yeah, let's...
Cam Smith getting out there. Altuve getting out there.
Okay.
Both of them talked about it afterward. They, you know, Cam Smith got that standing ovation, you know, rookie 21, 32 minor league games, and there he is standing in the middle of Minute
right.
Maid Park. And we didn't talk about this, but that was really funny to me with the audio we played earlier. When he's asking Joe Espada, are they going to fill it up all the way to the top row up there?
It reminds you how young he is.
Yes, how naive and, like I said, wholesome.
I will say, like, it was one of those things where you see him and how big he is, but sometimes, and maybe it's just the angle, right? Because you get the, in the park, you get the angle of those cameras shooting down in the outfield. He looks so much younger than, like, I realize. And, I mean, you know that he is a really young cat, a year removed from college. But he just looks so much younger. And a comment like that where he's asking somebody, like, are they really going to fill it up to the top? Yeah, dog. We talk about professional baseball. They filling this thing out.
It was really funny to me. Just the way that he's like, seriously? Wow, that's pretty wild. So yes, that was one of the wholesome moments, one of the best top moments. And then Altuve getting it, you know, getting the love as he went out to left field.
So that's specifically for yesterday, but can you take this wider just to the Astros in general? Is there a moment that comes to mind for you that you go, yeah, man, that was a moment that's going to live with me just for in Astros lore when it comes to a big moment? Because I'm interested to see if maybe you might pick the one that MLB picked for the Astros as their best opening day moment in franchise history.
Opening day moment. I would say, no, I can't think of one like that. I'm trying to think of what they came up with.
All right, what they came up with, March 29th, 2018, for the second year in a row, after a World Series, well, not the second year in a row after World Series, but the second year in a row, and then after also a World Series, you have George Springer leading off, sending a yard.
Okay.
Remember the back-to-back years where he goes yard in his first at-bat?
Mm-hmm.
Just lead off homer.
That definitely would be one, that's for sure. But here's the other one you had me thinking about, just Roger Clemens on opening day way back. The hometown hero, Katie, all that stuff, pitching on opening day. That would be definitely one.
All right. Well, I mean, it was a fun opening day game. We'll get another one, or not another opening day, but another baseball game.
The second opening day is today,
if you want to call it that. Hunter Brown on the mound for your Astros. Excited to see that. Apple TV Plus is where we're going to see that one at 7:10. Welcome in the fellas of the drive into our D&M Auto Leasing Crosstalk. It is Ron. It is Clint. And I'm very interested. I'm interested because we had the conversation yesterday. And you guys were like, Chaz, who? Did y'all have that moment when y'all saw Chaz come in the game where you're like, is he actually going to do this?
What, bring him in?
Mm-hmm. No, but once he came in, like, did you think maybe that he would actually, you know, come through for me and hit that home run, and y'all would actually have to lose it for Chaz? Well,
no. They wasn't going to give Chaz a chance to hit that home run. Put your latest bunt down,
Chaz. I was disappointed, but I was also, that makes 100%
sense. It was the anti-home run. Yeah.
Yeah, the interesting thing, too, not with our conversation, but just in general with the Astros, is that's the no-brainer, right? Late in the game, Cam Smith comes out.
Yeah.
You replace him with Chaz McCormick or whoever the hell they got up at that point in time. The Altuve part is when it's going to be a tighter ball game. That's going to be the
yeah.
I was going to say that's the no brainer, but I don't know if it's like who do you think's the better outfielder?
Cam and
Altuve.
I trust Cam.
Cam.
Yeah.
I trust Cam.
Is that even a discussion?
But to the point you're making is the easy part right now is to take Cam out and leave Jose in there.
Yeah.
Right now, just because you trust the bat,
yeah.
but.
Yeah, how long before that switches?
Well, yeah, because routinely they would do that to Yordan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When he was playing left field, they take Yordan out, and there is no bat in the lineup that is more important or better than he is.
No, absolutely.
Because like you could feel Cam with the first time doing this nerves. Like you could feel it through the TV screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm just wondering how long it is before that's gone. Because I feel like once that's gone, it's like, oh yeah, Altuve, hey, come sit by me.
My man Jose said, that's my ball.
Dude, Figgy put it perfect.
My ball, Jake.
Figgy put it perfect earlier. It's like whenever you're driving on the highway and you see two cars almost hit.
Yes.
And you're like, oh!
Yes.
Well, he also said it looked like when somebody run a red light and barely miss it. Because that's what it was. It was like, Jake's calling that dog. Let Jake get it. You're good.
He run the red light and then you step on the gas a little bit just in case the cops are late turning the corner. Jose just kept running to the dugout.
And look, I don't know if Jake would do this with many others. Maybe he'd do it to Zach DeZinzo. But I would imagine. I imagine Jake may like to have a conversation about, hey man, you know, we're out here, we're calling these off. But you sure as hell can't have that conversation with Jose. You just got to trot your ass back in.
He said the opposite. Just like after the game, he said, I probably should have called it earlier. No, man.
No, Jake, I mean, bow up, man.
Maybe I could have called it earlier.
That's one of my problems with Jake, man. No, Jake, I don't give a day. Say, man, no, we
clear. I'm the center fielder.
Hey, Jake, we caught that replay, man. You called it early and loud and often.
Hey, and you was camped up underneath that thing like that right here.
Yep. Altuve said, the hell you are.
Jake, he kept running and that smile just ran it on him.
Yeah, I was like, you play too much, man. We got real stakes out here.
Go ahead, Jake.
Jake actually went further and said, he said, he made a great play. I hope I can kind of lay back the next time and let him make a great play.
No.
I was like, no.
Please don't.
Don't lay back.
Please don't lay back.
We need to figure out who's doing what here.
Mm. Now, Jake out here saying, I'm going to lay back, and then we're going to see. Y'all going to let him do this?
There we are.
Well, shout out to Jake.
You going to let me hold it down? Hey, Jake had two hits yesterday.
RBI Jake, baby.
How about that, Jake?
Mm-hmm. Jake said the bat coming around this year.
Yeah, I had Jake on my underdog. I had lower than. And he blew that out of the water with his fielder's choice RBI there at the.
What a jaw.
I just signed up for underdog.
It's good. It's a fun little game, man.
And that's the beauty of baseball season.
Fun little game.
You miss one day, we got another game.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing about March Madness, too.
That is true.
Well, unless you're the Hogs, you got to go home.
I wasn't going to say. I was going to leave that to this man over here.
Oh, that was a painful watch, boys.
All right, so I'll let you guys get after each other on a fantastic Friday. We're done. We'll catch you on Monday. We've been in the loop. And right now, one more time, thanks to D&M Auto Leasing for this crosstalk. Right now, you're listening to KLT AM, KLT FM, HD2 Houston, and Odyssey Sports Station. And now The Drive is live.
The Drive is live.